Morning, everybody. Let me start off with a profound apology to my good friend Craig Hill at Iowa Farm Bureau. I think I made a reference to Craig Lang, who was the former president of the Iowa Farm Bureau, who was president when I was governor. So age is catching up with me. So I apologize to Craig Hill and the folks at the Iowa Farm Bureau. I think a couple of themes from the remarks today. Number one, it's not just producers and it's not just folks who live in rural America who are counting on Congress to getting their work done. Every single American's got a stake in getting a farm bill done. Not just because we like to eat, but 180 million Americans depend on what happens in rural America for water resources. 16 million Americans are employed because of agriculture and food industries. As we try to rebuild our manufacturing base in this country and get back in the business of making and creating and producing things instead of buying them from some other country, 14% of manufacturing jobs are connected and dependent on agriculture and food. So it's a big part of the economy. It's a huge opportunity for us to embrace in conservation, to continue promoting historic trade efforts, which help create jobs as well. It's a bill that supports our university systems, creating new opportunities for young people to get in the business of science and technology and to develop new products. And this bill would allow for an extension and leverage of additional dollars for research so that it should strengthen our university system, creating more opportunities for young people. It is about addressing the challenge of who's going to farm, and it's about this whole new rural economy we can build based on local and regional food systems and conservation and the bio-based economy in addition to production agriculture. So it is a important bill for the country. And there are adverse consequences if it doesn't get done and doesn't get done soon. Brazil is marching along towards an effort to retaliate. We are faced with the fact that if progress is not made and things break down, permanent law comes back into play. And the thing that concerns me specifically is that the baseline can be changed and altered based on recalculations if we wait too long to get this done, which will make it even more difficult to get a bill. So for that reason, we're strongly encouraging the members of the conference committee and specifically the leadership to find the will and the way to get it done. Our team at USDA continues to provide help and assistance, thoughts and ideas, and hopefully we can get this thing wrapped up very, very quickly. Second theme, and I'll finish with this. I think it is important for America to understand the benefit it has from the way in which agriculture has progressed in this country. It is the normal way of the world that as fewer people are needed to produce basic food and substance, it allows and frees up people to pursue other options and other opportunities. And Americans just have this extraordinary opportunity to be anything they want to be. And in part, that opportunity is a result of this extraordinary thing we call agriculture in this country. And there should be a recognition and an appreciation for that. Okay. Yes?
It appears the leadership butting heads over supply management on the dairy. Your analysis from what you see of the dairy industry, how do we get from where we are to perhaps the place that we need to go?
Well, that's a great question, Jeff. And I think without being too specific about what the answer could be, because I don't want to necessarily dictate to folks what they ought to do, but let me just say this. I think that everyone ought to be concerned about the fact that we've lost nearly 50% of our dairy producers in the last decade or so. Part of that is because dairy production has just become extraordinarily efficient. But part of it is because of the volatility of pricing in dairy. It seems to be less capable of the stability that we've seen in other agricultural commodities. And so if you're on the bubble, a downward spiral in prices that happens quickly can put you in a very difficult circumstance. So there needs to be, and I think part of the solution is a system that basically says when that differential between the costs of producing milk and the costs you get for your milk gets below a certain level, we need to kick in. We need to help. We need to provide assistance and help. Because that's what creates, and this is another really important point, that's what creates the risk of agriculture being reasonable. I mean, if you think about the risk in agriculture, you're going to spend your money and have no control over whether you actually have a crop, or Mother Nature can come in and wipe it out. That's an extraordinarily high risk, and unless you reduce that risk, not very many people are going to take it. So create the system that reduces the risk to a reasonable level. And then, because you want to be fiscally responsible, create some kind of mechanism that sends the appropriate signal to the market that, hey, we're producing a bit more than we should. We need to calibrate it. There are ways to do that, and I know the speaker has concerns. So maybe we ought to look for ways to get the kind of the processors out of that mix and figure out some other way to send that signal. And maybe what we do in other commodities, you know, we have CCC basically goes in the market of buying tart cherries or apples or apricots or whatever, wherever there's a kind of a surplus, kind of reduces that surplus and sends a message that the market should stabilize. That's a pretty good mechanism. It's worked pretty well. And so maybe there are ways to kind of craft something like that. There's got to be a way to get there. And there has to be a way to get there because you can't let one piece of this, as important as it is, overshadow all the other good that's waiting to happen. The disaster assistance for livestock producers, the certainty of the revenue protection programs for crop producers, the new opportunities for local and regional food systems that are in this bill, the ability to restore trade promotion, the capacity to get the research foundation started. I mean, there are just enormous benefits that could accrue from this bill, and the reforms, and the savings. All of that is now being held up. We just need to be creative, and people need to be willing to give. You know, and I'd be willing to give. And, you know, I'm confident that's going to happen.
Mr. Secretary.
Alan, you look serious this morning.
These are serious times, Mr. Secretary. On the Farm Bill, at what point would you be forced to begin implementing the 1949 law, and are there any active plans being formulated on how to implement it? Following also on the Farm Bill, what would a Farm Bill look like that would include Steve King's language on state laws?
Well, as far as permanent law is concerned, I will tell you what I've done at USDA. When the conference committee began to meet and progress began to occur on a variety of issues, and we saw a lot of willingness to get through a lot of the smaller issues and maybe even tackle some of the bigger issues, I asked our team to sort of move away from thinking about permanent law to thinking about how would we implement a new law. That's a much more pleasant task. And so we've put together groups, teams, based on the title. We asked those teams to assume what we know about potential drafts, what new regulation would be required, what law, what would we have to change in the way we do business, and ask them to prioritize each of those steps in terms of which is the most important thing we need to do right off the bat, and what's the second most important thing, the third most important thing. Then I asked the deputy to put together a steering committee, a conveners committee, that basically will overlook all of the titles. Because what happens with this is that I write a rule, and you over at NRCS writes a rule, and Jerry over there writes one in RD, and they all go to the same general counsel's office, and they all go to the same budget policy guy, and they all go to the same OMB person. So you create a bottleneck. So I've asked the convening group to essentially prioritize what steps we're going to take so we're in a position to move as quickly and as efficiently as possible. Now, I'm answering your question because I want you to know that's where our focus is. So our focus isn't on permanent law, and it won't be on permanent law until such time as it appears obvious to me that we're not going to have a farm bill. I'm not there today. I am more optimistic that we are going to have a farm bill. Now, if I go back to Washington this afternoon and the team comes in and they say things have blown up, you know, they can't reach an agreement, there's no compromise, they're stuck, then we'll start thinking about permanent law. And that takes time because it requires formulation of rules, thinks about how you might actually implement it, putting those rules out for review, comment, that takes time. So I don't want to go down that route because I only got so many people. I want my people to be spending their time on what makes sense. Now that we've seen some progress, it makes sense to prepare for and to create the expectation. Create the expectation that you're going to get this done. On the King Amendment, we'll see what the final bill is. I won't be secretary if that's contained in the bill, because by the time you go through all the legal challenges that will occur, and there will be a lot because it's not well drafted, it's very confusing, it's complex. There's a lot of unintended consequences. There are a lot of folks who have angst, not just outside of agriculture, but also inside agriculture, that thing's going to be challenged. So,
Mr. Secretary, when you were in...
Geez, I didn't know you were in the audience. I would have asked you for the first question. You're the dean of this whole group.
When you were in China last month, did you talk to your counterpart there about this GMO problem that continues to reject our corn crop?
I did, Orion, and it was an interesting conversation. And after I left, they did approve 4 or 5 renewals that had been sitting on the desk of ministers for some time. So that was a positive step. We talked about it in 3 contexts. Number one, we talked about the fact that this science is beneficial to Chinese producers. This is not about companies that have American influence or companies that have Western influence. This is about Chinese producers who will be empowered to do better and more if they have this technology. The response to that point was, you know, we get that this isn't a safety issue, and we get that our producers might benefit, but honestly, we are dealing with a populace that is suspicious, not of the safety of the technology, but of the fact it's Western technology. And we, Chinese officials, have to be sensitive to that and have to basically get our population in a better place. So that suggested to me that it isn't about the traditional convincing them that it's safe. It is about helping educate them and helping them educate their people that this is not, at the end of the day, for the benefit of Western civilization. It's for the benefit of Chinese farmers and Chinese consumers. The second conversation was, you know, one way we can educate you is by working with you in synchronizing our regulatory processes. Because right now, the way it works, we have to finish our regulatory process before China begins their regulatory process. And I have to say, I've been looking at the clips of this meeting of Farm Bureau, and I saw somebody from Bio spoke here the other day. She just basically provided false information. And it's just irritating to me that they continue to do this. They keep talking about how long it takes for regulatory approvals in this country and somehow suggesting that other countries are quicker. First of all, that's not accurate. Secondly, we have knocked 332 days off of our process through process improvement, and we continue to reduce the amount of time. We've actually reduced the backlog of petitions that we inherited from the Bush administration. So I wish Bio would get the talking point. That's a 3-year-old talking point. They need to get a more current talking point. And so in talking to the Chinese minister, Minister Han, I said, look, we can synchronize our processes, and we can save time for you and for us. We run into a little concern about the level of their science, the level of our science. So what we've been able to get them to agree to is to start on a pilot at the same time. We will have to probably finish before they do, but we'll at least start, and that could save a year in the process on their side. The third had to do with the specific shipment. And there I was told, not just by the Chinese, but also by folks representing American interests, shipping interests, that there was a significant issue between the company and the Chinese officials. They didn't get into detail as to what the issue was. That trait, that event, has not been approved by the Chinese. It's been approved in other countries, but it has not been approved by the Chinese. And it gets back to the first and second point, that their systems need to be upgraded, but they're facing political issues. And I think we just need to be patient. We're not going to be able to force these people to do something. We have to get them comfortable and confident enough to be able to do it. So that's the approach we're taking, and I think the approach reflects some success when they, after we left, put a little distance between my visit and their action, but after we left, four or five events that had been sitting for some time were finally approved. These were renewals, so it's not new, but it's comforting to the companies who have been waiting for quite some time for that permission.
Secretary, I told you we have time for one more question.
Okay, well, Lordy, one more. Really? One more? How about two more? Courtney, two more?
We can do two, but they have to be quick for the flight to catch them. Sorry.
Okay.
What can you tell us about the what's referred to as the Georgetown Partnership?
The Georgetown Partnership. You're going to have to give me a little bit.
I was hoping you could. Entrepreneurship.
Say what?
Entrepreneurship.
This is what my understanding is, that Farm Bureau is looking at ways in which it can help assist rural entrepreneurship, in other words, helping to create small business opportunities in rural America and create a sense of entrepreneurship so that young entrepreneurs could look for opportunities to start businesses in rural areas. What I liked about it was that it dovetails with what we're doing at USDA. We're trying to educate investment banks and investors of the opportunities to invest in rural opportunities. If you go to a Citibank, you go to a Bank of America, you go to J.P. Morgan, they are not aware of the fact that there are legitimate, honest-to-gosh profit opportunities in rural America that they could invest in. As our resources at USDA become a bit constrained because of budgets, despite our best efforts at Blueprint, we've saved, as I said earlier, about almost $1.2 billion. That's really allowed us to manage the budget cuts. But the reality is some of our program dollars have been cut. So we're now reaching out to see if we can leverage our program dollars. So, for example, if we have a water project that we'd love to do, but we don't have the resources to do it because we just don't have the appropriation, maybe Citibank will do it. Or we have these 9003 energy programs. Citibank's very interested in participating. But our rules and regulations were so cumbersome that it discouraged people from doing so. So we've simplified a lot of the processes. So I think that Farm Bureau sees this as a way of creating new opportunities for young people, new entrepreneur opportunities, and surveying how that could be done, where it needs to be done, what Farm Bureau's role could be, and we certainly are supportive of that. Chris, sort of geographic diversity here.
Thank you. Secretary, you've talked about Brazil in relation to the Farm Bill. And you mentioned this issue of retaliation on patents, mm-hmm, as a real threat. Could you elaborate on that? And do you understand from Brazil that what is written in this farm bill regarding crop insurance for cotton would satisfy them in terms of trade issues?
Chris, let me just say, I don't want to go so far as to say satisfied. I think that might be stretching it a bit. I think we have been, we meaning the large we, cotton, USDA, USTR, have been conversing with the Brazilians so that they know that we're attempting to get this thing done and that we don't want them to retaliate prematurely, that there's progress. They certainly are aware of what's being considered, and we have certainly listened to concerns when this process started months and months ago, and the drafting and crafting and adjustments have been made. Our hope is that this is a good faith effort along with what we could do on the export guarantee side. There's a significant change in that as well in this proposed farm bill that we hope would get us to a point where they're much more comfortable than they were when they filed the suit. On the patent issue, normally what happens, as I understand it, when there's retaliation, they assess a tariff or they assess some kind of financial penalty that makes your product a bit more uncompetitive in their market. The problem is that they're now suggesting that they have the legal right to assess it against intellectual property. So that what that would mean is that they would be able to essentially seize a formula or seize a formulation of some kind and make it available to the world. Well, all of the protections that we have that allow the owner or the developer of that formula to receive compensation for a period of time because it's unique would dissipate. And it would be a first ever situation. All the more reason. I mean, how many reasons do we have for Congress to get this done? I mean, this would be a horrible, horrible outcome. And it would obviously strain relations significantly. Doesn't have to be, shouldn't have to be. Let's get it done. We are on the one-yard line. We just need leadership to push it across the line, and for everybody to understand that the perfect can't be the enemy of the good, that there is a lot of good stuff in what these folks are thinking about. This is a very good solid farm bill. We just need to get it passed. The president needs to sign it, and then it's our job to implement it as effectively and as efficiently as we can. And that's my promise. We're going to do everything we can to make sure that happens. Thank you all very much. Thank you.